A controller is suspended for sending a 737 to check on an SR-22. More controversy surrounds the case of the sleeping controller. And the fight to save GPS gets heavyweight help. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, March 31st, 2011. The FAA is investigating an incident that occurred this past Sunday when an air traffic controller in the Central Florida TRACON requested assistance from the crew of an airliner in checking on a Cirrus SR-22 that had been out of radio contact for over an hour. The Cirrus was on course for Kissimmee, Florida, and maintaining 11,000 feet. Air traffic controllers at Jacksonville Center repeatedly tried to reach the aircraft with no success. Southwest Flight 821, a Boeing 737, was 10 miles in trail of the Cirrus at 12,000 feet and heading for Orlando International Airport. The controller asked the crew members of the Southwest flight if they could check the cockpit of the Cirrus. The crew agreed and was directed toward the Cirrus, then reported the aircraft in sight. The Southwest pilots reported seeing two people in the cockpit. The Southwest flight was then vectored for arrival at Orlando. About 30 seconds later, the Cirrus pilot contacted Jacksonville Center, which gave him the correct frequency. Both aircraft landed safely at their destinations. Preliminary information indicates there was a loss of required separation between the two aircraft. The FAA has suspended the air traffic controller, who is a supervisor. FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt commented, quote, "By placing this passenger aircraft in close proximity to another plane, the air traffic controller compromised the safety of everyone involved. This incident was totally inappropriate. We are reviewing the air traffic procedures used here and making sure everyone understands the protocols for contacting an unresponsive aircraft," unquote. In the case of the sleeping controller at Reagan National, a former FAA attorney has taken a seat in the peanut gallery, along with others, criticizing the two airline pilots who followed TRACON instructions and landed at the airport despite being unable to contact the tower. A report in the Wall Street Journal quotes Loretta Alcalay, who was once the FAA's top lawyer for the Eastern Region, calling the landings clearly inappropriate and calling the notion that the landings were safe and that there were no violation of the FARs clearly preposterous. Both airliners, an American Airlines 737 and a United Airlines A320, landed safely. Alcalay insists the decision to land when the pilot is unable to reach the tower is, quote, "absolutely not up to the pilot," unquote. Perhaps she missed the part about the Potomac TRACON instructing the pilots to treat Reagan as an uncontrolled airport, use the tower frequency as a CTAF, and proceed with their landings. Or perhaps one comment left by a reader of the story in the Wall Street Journal has some merit. Quote, "The former FAA lawyer is fishing for clients who will no doubt have post-unknown traumatic disorder and see the need to shake down American and or United shareholders for a few million," unquote. Former NTSB member Richard Heeling told the paper that he was more than a little surprised that the flights were not diverted, considering the potential for other planes or vehicles to have been on the runway. A current NTSB spokesman says the pilot's decision to land is under investigation by the board. A spokesman for American Airlines says its pilots followed clearly defined FAA procedures, and once it was determined that Reagan National was, for all intents and purposes, an uncontrolled airport, the planes did not need clearance to land. Former NTSB Chair Mark Rosanker agrees, saying that based on available information, the pilots, quote, "acted appropriately," unquote. The General Aviation Manufacturers Association has formally welcomed active engagement from the U.S. Departments of Transportation and Defense in the debate over a proposal by the Federal Communications Commission to ignore international agreements and allow high-power terrestrial transmitters in the U.S. on frequencies adjacent to the band used for GPS. A company called LightSquared proposes to deploy 40,000 transmitters, each capable of 1.5 kilowatts of output, in a system to bring broadband internet coverage to remote areas. A study released as a white paper by Garmin found interference to WAAS GPS receivers could extend up to 13 miles from those transmitters. Following a meeting last week in Wichita with Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood and general aviation manufacturing leaders, Garmin marketing VP Gary Kelly commented, quote, "We are very appreciative that Secretary LaHood has taken up this issue in partnership with Defense Secretary Gates, since the consequences of disruption to GPS signals are far-reaching," unquote. Cessna CEO Jack Pelton added, quote, Modern air travel for our industry is inconceivable without a reliable GPS system to guide it. Even minimal predicted interference to GPS operations creates unacceptable risks to life and property. It is imperative that the LightSquared system not be deployed unless it can be guaranteed that the existing GPS system is fully protected from radio interference, unquote. Gamma President Pete Bunce added, quote, GPS was first launched more than 30 years ago and is relied upon by all sectors of aviation, military, commercial, and general aviation. Any system that threatens the reception of GPS signals could have a catastrophic effect on the extensive ground and air infrastructure that has already been deployed and paid for by operators and the U.S. taxpayer, unquote. Gamma, Garmin, Cessna, and other Gamma member companies are members of the Coalition to Save Our GPS. Garmin's Ted Gartner will be my guest on the Friday Aero News special feature to discuss this issue. Up next on ANN, Cessna's LSA gets synthetic vision. Garmin officially launches the G2000, and the Honda Jet exceeds performance projections. You're listening to Aero News.
Freedom through control. Cirrus has completely reinvented the personal aircraft and the entire experience of owning a personal aircraft. It's a bold new take on private aviation that we call Cirrus Flying 2.0. You set the schedule. You chart the course. You're in control.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing from March 31st. I'm Paul Plack. Cessna says its 162 Skycatcher, of which it has now delivered 45, is getting some new panel features. Garmin has a synthetic vision system called Pathways, ready for the Skycatcher's G300 display. The new feature will be standard by the end of this year, with retrofit availability to follow. Similar capability has also been announced for the 3GX, which Garmin sells into the experimental and LSA markets. Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University says its flight teams from the Prescott, Arizona and Daytona Beach, Florida campuses are the first to compete using Skycatchers. The school will participate in short field and power off landing competitions in the National Intercollegiate Flying Association Safety Conference in May. And King Schools has released its Flying the Skycatcher DVD training program, which is the official pilot transition course used in Cessna pilot centers worldwide. The DVD program covers all the critical phases of flight as pilots fly along with John and Martha King for 25 maneuvers. Garmin officially debuted its new G2000 touchscreen panel in the Cessna Corvallis this week at Tampa, Florida. The company's now officially throwing the order book open to all high-performance piston aircraft. The company says the 2000 will give pilots many of the same advantages found on systems like the Garmin G3000, which is designed for Part 23 turbine aircraft, or the Garmin G5000 that's being designed for the crew-flown business jet market. Garmin says it expects certification of the G2000 before the end of this year, and it is currently planned to be offered directly from aircraft manufacturers on new models. Honda reports the first FAA-conforming Honda Jet light business jet has achieved a maximum speed of 425 knots true. That's 489 miles per hour at 30,000 feet, and a maximum Mach number of 0.72 above 30,000 feet. This beats the company's performance commitment of 420 knots for the production Honda Jet. The 425-knot speed was recorded on March 11th. Michimasa Fujino, Honda Aircraft Company CEO, commented, quote, "Our flight tests indicate the aircraft is handling and performing as expected, with excellent control harmony and stability. In addition, the Honda Jet's HF-120 engines are exhibiting carefree handling of thrust and are supporting top-level performance and efficiency," unquote. Flight testing is taking place at Honda Aircraft Company's world headquarters in Greensboro, North Carolina. A second FAA-conforming aircraft has undergone numerous structural tests, and the mating of the major components of a third has been completed. A fourth conforming flight test aircraft is in the final stages of mating those major assemblies, and a fifth one is planned. Construction of the 263,000-square-foot Honda Jet production facility on the company's Greensboro campus is said to be nearing completion. Honda Jet production ramp-up is on track to begin in 2012. Piper Aircraft has announced a training program it calls Ready, Set, Fly. Buyers of new Archer LX aircraft are being offered a concentrated three-week course, which the company says answers complaints in an AOPA survey that found flight training has been inconvenient, lacking in quality, and hard to schedule. Piper Executive VP Randy Groom says the program, quote, addresses the convenience issue head-on, because the standardized training course will be offered in a highly concentrated three-week course with a dedicated professional instructor, and prospective Archer LX pilots will learn to fly safely and efficiently in a professional environment while enjoying the flying benefits of a warm, pleasant coastal environment, and they will get to do it in their very own aircraft, unquote. The Archer LX is powered by a single Lycoming O360 and can make 128 knots true with a range of 522 nautical miles. With the Garmin G500 avionics suite, it costs about $310,000 new, including standard leather seats and air conditioning. Piper says if you're already a qualified private pilot, you can apply the Ready, Set, Fly privileges toward another FAA certification. Customers can also elect to conduct the training at other locations with the training providers of their choice. There was nothing on the Piper website about the new program as of our deadline last night, so contact the company or a representative for more details. Still ahead, flight school operators are invited to meet in Tennessee. Spirit Airlines puts another clamp on your wallet. And why do I feel hungry every time a jet goes by? You're listening to Aero News.
Piper Jet.
Piper Match.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, March 31st. I'm Paul Plack. The Flight School Association of North America has set April 13th through 15th as the dates for its second annual Operators Conference. That meeting will be held in Nashville, Tennessee. In an open letter on the association website, Chairman Vern Moyer and President Robert Rockmaker explained that the conference is the only one in the nation solely focused on the flight training industry. Sessions will explore issues impacting the flight school sector nationwide. They say the conference also gives flight school operators an opportunity to network with peers, supply chain partners, and government officials involved in the flight training business, and will help operators develop programs and curricula. The registration form for the conference is available online, and there are scholarships available to help with registration fees. Get the details and the form at fsana.com. Researchers are testing what they call an eco-friendly biofuel on a NASA DC-8 to measure its performance and emissions. The fuel is called hydro-treated renewable jet fuel, and the tests are being conducted at NASA's Dryden Flight Research Center in California. Langley's Bruce Anderson, the project scientist, dispelled any notion that this fuel is some high-tech laboratory creation. Quote, "It's made out of chicken fat, actually. The Air Force bought many thousands of gallons of this to burn in some of their jets, and provided about 8,000 gallons to NASA for this experiment," unquote. The tests are funded and managed by the Fundamental Aeronautics Program of NASA's Aeronautics Research Mission Directorate in Washington. Spirit Airlines has announced its passengers will now be charged an additional $5 if they wait to pay within 24 hours of scheduled departure time, and an additional $10 if they make their arrangements by telephone. Spirit spokesman Misty Pinson says the charges are basically for the privilege of interacting with a human being. She said the airline is passing savings on to customers who choose self-service options. The price for a carry-on bag is $30 in advance, $40 at the check-in counter, and $45 if the bag has to be gate-checked. Spirit is the only airline to charge fees for carry-on luggage. The airline has also lowered its excess weight threshold for extra fees on checked luggage from 50 pounds to 40. Happy spring break! And finally, tomorrow is April 1st. I remind you of that only because if you're used to starting your day with a look at our website or the PropWash email newsletter, the world may seem a very strange place in the morning. Our April 1st parodies are great fun, and they'll be clearly identified as spoofs, but you'd be surprised how many people take them seriously. In the past, they've generated everything from emergency board meetings at aircraft manufacturers to unwelcomed telephone call volume at FAA headquarters. So keep an eye on the calendar. There will also be real news tomorrow, and it will be clearly identified as such as well. If I say any more about it now, I'll spoil the fun. So remember, you've been warned. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, it's part two of my conversation with AEA's VP for Government and Industry Affairs, Rick Perry, touching on next-gen and threats to the integrity of the GPS system. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.